All right, so I have had the privilege, and our center has had the privilege of evaluating a really neat community-based project over the last 3 years. We've had the privilege of seeing about a third of the grantees continue over 3 years and have gotten repeat funding. And then we've gotten some new grantees along the way that have sort of added some flavor and gave us some additional lessons learned and interesting information. Before I go any further, I have no relationships to disclose, and I literally took this line exactly from what they told me to do. So there you go. Okay, so this initiative started out in 2010 as a pilot. It was really a random experiment. There was some money left over in a grant and said, hey, let's try this. What's going to happen? Poof. 5 years later, we've got some, it's a little tighter, a little nicer. We've got some data to support it. That's always a great option, right? And so what this is it's the New Jersey Healthy Community Network, and it's a grant initiative of that network. It is a funding collaborative of a variety of funders that I'll explain in a moment. And they give out small grants to community-based organizations throughout the state of New Jersey. These are small grants. These are $10,000 for 9 months. These are tiny. These are rapid response. This is quick and dirty. These grantees are focused on advancing local policies around healthy eating, active living. We want to change the way communities look and feel, and not so much at events and random programming. This is supposed to be more strategic. They also are designed to engage communities that face socioeconomic and other barriers to health. Now, these might be municipality-wide, like in the case of Newark or Camden. I'm guessing those are somewhat familiar to some of you about their areas of need. But it may also be one small census tract within a high-income area that has a particularly high concentration of immigrants that are coming into that area. So these really vary in their scope and who they're going after. And ultimately, these increase local primary prevention funds that are coming into the town and municipality or community and neighborhood. So what does it mean to be a grantee? And just this is just for some context. Basically, what happens is in January, you get about $10,000, and we ask folks to implement two strategies. One is a healthy eating related strategy. The other is a physical activity or built environment strategy. This is based on a menu of strategies based on evidence. So this might be complete streets ordinances, or it might be farmers markets, those kinds of things. We also ask grantees to blog once a month. So this initially replaced grantee progress reports, and it's a WordPress blog. It's publicly available so anyone can see what's happening with these grant projects. And then grantees also participate in conference calls, face-to-face meetings, and webinars. And that links to what they get out of it and what we've heard they get out of it through some of our data collection. There's a lot of peer-to-peer learning. These conference calls, folks share information, they share their progress, they share their challenges, they share their lessons learned, so that each grantee can beg, borrow, and steal ideas from each other. Initially, it didn't work so well. But over the years, there's been some more trust built across the communities, and as well, the technical assistance providers have also been able to massage their approaches a little bit to make it a little bit more open and honest and facilitate that conversation a little bit more in an open way. Lots of capacity building meetings come together, folks break out into setting-based groups, and they talk about, okay, so we're working in schools, well, we're having a hard time because the district won't let us in, or, oh, hey, we had that challenge last year, here, let me tell you about here's some strategies you might use to overcome that. To give you an idea of the scope, since 2013, since 2010 was the pilot year, 2012 was sort of the planning year, slash maybe funds weren't available. So since 2013, these happened in 2013, 2014 just closed out 2015, 45 community partnerships received microgrants. Of those, 9 of them started from 2013 and were repeatedly funded. Those 45 partnerships supported 95 microgrant projects. And so these projects included 1 physical activity, 1 built environment or active living. 5 agencies have provided grants and technical assistance. Now, what's interesting about this is we have everybody from the state health department to a very large health system to Partnership for Healthy Kids, which is funded through Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, the New Jersey State YMCA Alliance. So we've got some nonprofit and community-based organizations, and then we have Partners for Health, which is a local foundation. Really varied funders, lots of different needs, lots of different priorities. very challenging to get everyone on the same page, and there has been some issues around translation about, hey, if you need counts of things, what does that mean for you? And so just being able to talk amongst all of the funders to get them all on the same page about what they're all giving grants out and what they want out of it. So just to give you a snapshot of that. Over the 3 years, we've used very complementary and similar evaluation designs, so it enabled us to put all of this information together. Because these were very short amount of time, these grants were for only about 9 months, and the dollar amount that these grantees received was fairly low, about $10,000, we needed to make this a very thrifty evaluation. We needed to decrease the burden on participants because they're doing these projects in addition to all of the other really great things that they're doing in their organizations. So we used a lot of existing data, and this had a very qualitative emphasis. So program data, we did lots of observations and recording of all of the meetings and learning collaboratives and conference calls where folks really talked about what their challenges and successes were. We pulled out lots of information from their blog posts that they put up every month. We got great program data about what's the process and what are the sort of milestones that folks went through to implement the projects. And then we did a grantee survey once a year. This had a lot of process measures about, hey, how did this go? But it also had some information about, did you achieve what you wanted to achieve? And then a grantee interview allowed us to dive in deep about the projects that folks implemented with a random sample of about 15 or so grantees each year. So out of that data that we collected, we started to see, and it really came to fruition this year, all of a sudden we started to see that there are the puzzle pieces were coming together, and that the ultimate outcome of this grant initiative is not to specifically say, make your community healthier. That is a good outcome, and it's ultimately down the road what they wanted to do, but the key part of this initiative is to catalyze and spark additional work and to deepen the work and to be able to leverage additional resources. Small money, you're not going to make giant changes, but you can start to plant the seeds for those changes. So what our question was, what are the factors that are associated with those communities who were able to catalyze that work and to be able to get some additional dollars and resources coming in? So what we found is that there are three main components that sort of mesh together and get to these leveraged resources. So we found that folks who were able to make some changes in their communities, they had some small wins that ultimately built to larger wins. Those combined with really strong and diverse and extensive partnerships, along with being able to use social media and using a whole lot of community outreach. When all those three came together, we saw that communities were able to leverage resources. So I'm going to pull each of these apart a little bit for you. First, for policy environmental changes. So about 103 food and nutrition related changes were made. These include things like community gardens, farmers markets. They also include something smaller in scope, like just being able to make a child care center change a policy to make sure that water is available to all of their students. Over the years, what we've seen is that the percentage of grantees who report making progress toward or actually making policy improvements initially varied and then really dropped off this year. That we have a hunch of a couple things. One is that policy changes are really hard to make, and as folks have taken on additional projects and have deepened the work that they're doing, they've taken on harder policies to address. So they didn't always hit the mark. But that isn't the true outcome of what we wanted. So we said, that's okay, because there's some other great things that happened. Changing the food environment, we've had pretty stable reports of that people have been able to make some changes in their environment. Again, these things might be something like integrating more healthy eating or healthy eating lessons in the curriculum within schools. We've also seen some changes in the food environment, like creating healthier signage or signage for healthier food options in local corner stores and bodegas in various places. So physical activity side, built environment, we had about the same, 109 changes made. When you pull that apart, again, we saw a drop off in the policy end of this. Again, a little bit harder, people doing more difficult things. So for example, this year we had a good amount of folks trying to really make changes and introduce complete streets ordinances into their towns. That's really hard to do, and it's really hard to do in 9 months. So we didn't see as much happen, but again, I think there's some additional lessons here. in terms of environmental improvements. This is an example from a grantee last year who they put in a walking path in a rural area down in South Jersey. And so we saw some changes in 2014. That number is questionable, but I'm showing that to you anyway to show that there are some questionable data. Moving along. So the next piece of this that was really important to us was about partnerships. And we noticed that for our repeat grantees, their partnerships looked a little bit different than the new grantees. And so we also noticed that people who were really able to implement policy changes, people who got the complete streets ordinance, people who changed zoning regulations to enable them to have a farmer's market in the parking lot of the library, there was something different about their partners, their partnership than for other people. And what we noticed was there was this tier one of partnership. It was the usual suspect. It's we're starting this work, we need to get some small wins, we haven't done too much of this, and we're going to create a school wellness policy. So we're going to bring in the Board of Education, we're going to bring in the PTA. That's sort of what I would say are the usual suspects, the people that you would initially guess would be the people you bring to the table. But then in the next year, or people who were sort of going after those harder policy changes, what we noticed is they were going to larger partnerships that were either already established in their community or completely outside the usual suspects box. So it was starting to see people reach out towards their metropolitan planning associations and reaching out to the transportation planners and developers. We also saw people reaching out to the larger networks that were working on community health needs assessments, so their healthcare systems. We also saw people reaching out to sort of the nonprofit arms of a housing and urban development association as well. So what we saw was it went from we're working in a school, we're just going to work with the school board, to we're working in a school, we're going to bring in the transportation planners, we're going to bring in housing and urban development, we're going to bring in all of these existing entities that are all working together, but we're going to bring you to the table. The other thing that we found out about these partnerships is that once you brought more people to the table, it was harder to herd the cats. So what we noticed was people who were able to really use these extensive, more diverse networks, they built and enhanced these collaborations. It was a lot of lots of meetings, lots of patience, and lots of people skills about being able to bring these people to the table and keep them there. So they built and enhanced collaborations, and they got community buy-in. These folks that they brought to the table were not just the organizations and policymakers and decision makers in the communities. It was the people that were directly affected. I can think of one particular community where Miss Rosie was sort of the neighborhood advocate in Irvington, New Jersey, and Miss Rosie wanted a community garden because she couldn't get fresh fruits and vegetables. Ms. Rosie went to the health officer. The health officer said, okay, Ms. Rosie, we're going to see what we can do. Ms. Rosie has been sort of the champion and advocate and, pardon my French, hellraiser in that town right now around making sure that she's got healthy food for her kids. So we also know that these partnerships had strong leadership. A lot of our grantees are YMCAs, and their executive directors seem to really spearhead and make sure that they had a lot of good leadership capacity to make sure that they kept people at the table and kept them engaged. The other piece about this is social media. The social media could also be considered community outreach, and this was just a tool that folks used to do that. In part, social media was Facebook, it was Twitter, and it was these WordPress blogs that folks did. And what we heard from interviews and what we got from the blog information and what we heard from all the meetings was that the social media helped to build partners because people would see that Irvington Health Department was doing this community garden. Other people wanted to participate and get involved and see how they could be involved. So it helped them build some partnerships. We also know that it increased participation. So, for example, in East Orange, they were doing an activity day as part of a more comprehensive, regular introduction of physical activity and community-based physical activity in their town. And so they put on Facebook and their WordPress blog, and they put on Twitter, I believe, as well, hey, we're having this event on Saturday morning, come on out. So they had done this prior to receiving the grant, and they had only gotten about 20 or 30 folks. After lots and lots of putting it out into the universe and using their partnerships, they ended up getting over 600 people to participate in this activity day. That is huge in thinking about a community like East Orange, which is right outside of Newark. Socioeconomic status is pretty low, lots and lots of issues. And they had a great time. We've got great pictures of that day. It also helped raise awareness. So For example, in Salem, they were creating this walking path. They wanted to raise awareness that walking is really important to folks and you should get out and spread the word and come join us and learn about why walking is important. And now we have a new opportunity to help you walk in your community. So to increase awareness about healthy eating and active living and how folks can add it to their community. And it also helped attract volunteers. In one particular agency, they were building community, or they were working on a community garden. They needed additional people to help them tend their community garden. And they put it out on social media, and by the end of the day, they had more people than they knew what to do with to help them with their gardens. So all of that comes together, we noticed, because all the grantees managed to leverage some kind of support. All of the grantees managed to beg, borrow, and steal resources from folks around them. And that might look like staff time. People donated staff time. The Department of Transportation folks or the planners said, okay, yeah, I can come to a meeting. Here you go. Here's some time. We had some other folks the cooperative extension folks were really helpful in community gardens and various things like that. They were able to donate their time to help people figure out what to plant, where to plant, and how to prepare the beds to do that planting. We also heard volunteers. Again, I gave that example before about the community garden bringing in volunteers through social media. Gardening materials was also really popular. We heard that a lot. I gave the example about Miss Rosie before in Irvington. The health officer was able to, he found a listing on Craigslist for a fence, and he needed a fence for his garden. He followed up on the listing on Craigslist, said, hey, I want your fence. Talked to his Department of Public Works. They said, okay, we can go pick it up. They took their truck on Public Works time, went to go pick up this free fence, and then they had a free fence to close in their garden. Kind of scrappy, but kind of fantastic, all in the same way. So then this is sort of the biggie that we were actually really pretty surprised to find out. So about 1 in 5 of the grantees were able to leverage additional funding. And what made these grantees unique is that they had really strong leaders. And they really had this down to a science. They knew how to get people to the table. They brought in lots of different kinds of people that were part of existing initiatives in their communities, and they were leveraging that information. They were able to make changes. They used the small wins that they had about policy and environmental changes over the years, and they were able to use that to their advantage and use that to strategically plan for larger community-based changes. A good example of this is that one of the grantees, it was a local YMCA branch out in Hunterdon County. Hunterdon County tends to be fairly high income, but this particular area has a large amount of Central American immigrants right now. And what they were able to do is bringing in lots of different folks around the community. They brought in some farmers, they brought in some agriculture planners, they brought in the cooperative extension. What they were able to do is, first year, they built a garden. The garden took off, did great things. Second year, they were able to create a distribution center of donating the yield from that garden to a local pantry. Then the third year, they were able to take that local pantry and then pack it in a truck and go out and deliver it to additional folks who needed the work. So they really were able to sort of build on their successes, build on their wins, deepen the work that they were doing, increase the diversity and the depth of their partnerships, and then they used some of those successes to get additional grant funding from other entities. So overall, this is our guiding theory of change that we're using now. We've got some work to do to flesh this out a little bit. Every year we get new grantees, we hear about new things, we hear new projects, and it's sort of figuring out how all of that fits into this and adjusting and shaping this to help us move forward. The way that we're using some of this information is that the technical assistance providers are now using this information to target what kinds of information and resources they give to these grantees when they come to their big meetings. So what are the techniques and tools that folks can use to really be able to translate what they're doing and the importance of what they're doing to the transportation planner, to the urban developer in that particular area. So they're learning those skills, and the technical assistance providers are helping folks to hone those skills moving forward. Some limitations of the information that we collected, just want to put that out there. This is very qualitative in nature. We don't have quantitative data to solidify, you know, what the model looks like and predictive natures of the model. That's something we're looking to do in the future, is to see if we can sort of take this take this idea that we have and see if we can put some more stats to it to determine if there is a significant difference between folks who are doing this and who aren't, because this really comes from our qualitative data, which we think is super important. And there's lots of other things, but I think it's time for questions. So this is all about growing things and growing partnerships and growing communities, and that's my contact information and my fabulous colleague who helps make the world a better place, Lena Acosta. Well, thank you.